Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Hello, welcome to CRE Radio. Today's show is Real Estate Crowdfunding and Other New Financing Opportunities with Gene Trowbridge. Our call-in number is 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492. If you'd like to leave a comment or ask a question, please press 1 to talk. Also, you can tweet us at, that's using the at sign, CRE Radio. You could also leave comments at www.creradio.com/crowdfunding. And let's proceed with the show. So, Gene, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Howard.
Good morning, Gene. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's a lovely day.
Oh, yeah, I haven't even been outside yet today, unfortunately. I was up early in the morning working away, as I usually am. Gene has been on our show once before. He's like the most significant educator of real estate syndications that I'm aware of, and that he speaks all over the country, and I saw Gene about a month ago where he spoke at a Sperry real estate forum, and we got into a discussion over the new Jobs Act. So, Gene, why don't we just get right into the conversation? Tell us what the Jobs Act is and what its purpose was.
All right, Howard, the Jobs Act, I think the real wording was jumpstart our business startups. So you can see from that what they're trying to do is they're trying to get small businesses some incentive and a kick in the rear end to get going. And what they thought they needed to do was facilitate the formation of capital so that small businesses could start and grow and hire more people. So that's what the Jobs Act was. And there were really a couple parts to the Jobs Act, and it all had to deal with raising money more effectively than we've been doing in the past.
No. Okay. So why don't we talk about the significant changes brought on by the Jobs Act? Why don't we start with that, if you don't mind?
All right. Well, the first change that I think we should talk about today is that the Jobs Act eliminated the restriction on advertising when you're going to sell a security through a Regulation D offering and a particular part of Regulation D, which is called Rule 506. Every security that's sold has to be registered with the SEC unless it's exempt. And Regulation D has always been the rule that has allowed us to sell exempt securities, so we don't have to go through the time and the expense of going to the Securities and Exchange Commission. But until the Jobs Act, every sale of a security under Regulation D had to be completed to someone with whom you had a pre-existing relation. And that definition is kind of broad and difficult to work with. But suffice to say, you could not make an offer through advertising or solicitation. So in the Jobs Act, they said, well, you know, if we're going to sell securities to people who are rich and smart and who can determine for themselves whether the investment is suitable for them. Why don't we have some advertising? Why don't we let the sponsors of the securities offering advertise for those people and let those people make up their own mind whether they want to invest in the transaction or not. So they created something called Rule 506C, the letter C, and that rule, when it's fully implemented, allows advertising on the sale of securities where every investor is accredited, Howard.
Okay, we're going to get into the conversation of accredited investors, what that really means, and the addition of sophisticated investors and what that definition is, because that's going to be very significant. But probably the key element that you're talking about at this moment is the addition of advertising where you didn't have to have a pre-existing relationship. What about the amount of money that you can raise as it relates to accredited investors? Is there any limit?
No, Regulation D, Rule 506, has always been unlimited to the amount of money you can raise, and it's always been unlimited to the number of accredited investors you have. So that hasn't changed.
No, so that won't change even if you add advertising, correct?
No, that won't change. And you know, Howard, you and I have talked about this Regulation D, and just briefly, I think we should mention that in 2012, the SEC thinks that about $1 trillion was raised in Regulation D Rule 506 offerings throughout the United States. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of capital formation. And they think that based on some past history that they have, that the allowing of advertising might bump that up in 2014 by about 20%, by another maybe $200 billion. This is big time, Howard. This is very big big stuff.
Now, I know that this is called the Jobs Act. Is this act about creating jobs?
No, it's just about capital formation. Just about capital formation, and of course capital formation is important to people who want to start jobs or want to expand their companies and hire more people. That's the idea.
Now, we've used in the title of the show, and it seems to be the major catchword, is crowdfunding.
Sure.
As it relates to the raising of capital in commercial real estate, should we just use crowdfunding, you know, just generically for everything, or is there perhaps a narrower definition? Maybe we could start out with perhaps what the historical use of the term is, so that we can distinguish it from what the Jobs Act actually does in that respect.
Well, that's a good idea. Historically, especially in Europe, people who want to raise money for a startup products, clubs, or other things where they're not really selling a security and they're not looking for the people to invest with them with the intention of making a profit, they've been able to go online and raise money from a lot of people, and they've always used the term crowdfunding. Maybe they raise money from a large number of people to help them get a product patented and started and produced, and then the people who invested could buy the product at a discounted price. But there's never been such a thing as selling stock that way or selling shares in an LLC that way. Well, here comes the Jobs Act, and in the Jobs Act, one of the provisions, a different provision than we were talking about earlier, came along and said, we're going to authorize crowdfunding in the United States for the sale of securities. And they used the term crowdfunding, and everyone heard that and say, oh, good, now we can do what's been happening in the past. But that was just a poor choice of words, I think. In the statute, the Jobs Act, crowdfunding is a very specific way of raising money in the sale of a security. Remember, every security has to be registered with the SEC unless it's exempt. And now a crowdfunding type of security will be exempt. And people can go online. The idea behind it, Howard, is that people could go on the Internet and raise money from an awful lot of people in dollar amounts, maybe as small as $1,000, in order to raise some money to get their product started or get their business started, small business.
All right, Howard, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd
like to get into that because there are all kinds of limitations, not only in the opportunity to start using that, but I'd like to clearly draw a distinction between this kind of small business and the idea that larger syndications are going to be able to use that. So today we're discussing crowdfunding and new financing options with Gene Trowbridge here on CRE Radio. We will be right back.
The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@creradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Glad to have you with us today. Before the break, we were talking with Gene Trowbridge about crowdfunding and whether or not it was a misnomer or misuse of the term, particularly as other people see that. Gene, what about, does crowdfunding on these smaller investments, do they require regulations? I mean, can you participate in the crowdfunding right now as it relates to the new Jobs Act?
Actually, Howard, you cannot. If you went to the SEC website today, you would see a notice that says that while crowdfunding has, was included in the Jobs Act, the Jobs Act also requires the SEC to write the rules and regulations that allows crowdfunding to take place. And until those rules and regulations are written, crowdfunding is a violation of the law. Well, we haven't seen any rules. We haven't seen any proposed rules. We haven't heard any talk of any rules. And it's been well over a year. So most of us think that during the first quarter of next year, we should start seeing some movement on what the Jobs Act says of crowdfunding. And why the rules are so important, I mean, that statute, that provision is very narrowly drafted. It says crowdfunding will let you raise up to $1 million in a 12-month period of time. It has to be raised, the money has to be raised through some sort of a broker-dealer relationship, which isn't clear exactly what that is. They call it a funding portal, but no one really knows what that is. There's no such thing as worrying about an accredited investor. To open up the capital markets, you're going to be able to raise small amounts of money from investors basically on what their net worth is. And I think they're going to put a maximum of 10% of your net worth could be invested in a crowdfunding deal, but no more than $100,000 from any one investor. So it's very specific. Now, why that's important, back to what you and I were talking about earlier, Howard, is that we hear the words crowdfunding all the time. We hear companies say, oh, we crowdfunded and we raised $45 million from accredited investors online to do this deal. Well, it's a vocabulary issue. They didn't do crowdfunding according to the Jobs Act, and you know they didn't because they raised $45 million. You know they didn't because they've only used accredited investors. Neither one of those things are part of crowdfunding in the Jobs Act. But what they did is they took advantage of what we talked about earlier, Rule 506C, where you can advertise, and as long as all of your investors are accredited, you can raise as much money as you want, and you can do it on the Internet. So they usurp the term, and they're doing whatever they're doing legally. But I wish we didn't have this confusion in the terms.
Yeah, I think that is very, very important because everybody loves the term crowdfunding. Oh, I can do anything in the world now. Go on the Internet. I could sell almost anything. I could sell securities, and that's really not what the Jobs Act, how it defines crowdfunding, and it's a very perhaps more specific. This is not for someone who's looking to raise $10 million for a shopping center or $100 million to buy 10 shopping centers, correct?
No, it's not. It's $1 million in a 12-month period of time for one sponsor. When it first came out, Howard, a lot of us talked and we said, well, that's not even going to be important. However, if you think about it, you can buy a lot of real estate if you have $1 million in equity, or you can do hard money loans if you had $1 million in equity, or you could do bridge loans. There are all sorts of real estate applications that $1 million, depending upon where you are in the country, will go a long way. You know, we in the last year we syndicated to help someone start a software company. Howard, what if you wanted to raise $1 million to take your radio show intergalactically? This would be a great platform for you when it's ready to go. You could get a lot of people putting in $1,000 to invest in your radio show, and I'd do that. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. So it's really good for, as it relates to commercial real estate. If there's a group of brokers who are looking to put together a brokerage company or a property management company, it would be perfect. Not necessarily for the purpose of investing in real estate. On the other hand, we talked about going out for someone who's really into buying homes for investment purposes. $1 million, you may be able to, in certain parts of the country, pick up 10 homes and then you fix them up, rent them out, flip them. You could actually grow into a very large company by starting in that small way.
And that's ideally what it's for. I think it was really for the businessman who, if he could buy the vacant lot next door, he could have more parking, or he could expand his business, or he could get all his friends together and they could pool some money and he could start a restaurant because he's a really good cook. But with the securities laws the way they are, it was so very, very difficult for him to raise money. This really opens it up. You know, just as you mentioned the brokerage business, I was thinking about a broker who, and I run into this quite a bit, a lot of brokers come and talk to me about opening up ownership in their brokerage practice to their agents. And while it may sound like a good idea, it's a really difficult issue in the era before crowdfunding because of the securities application of that. But, that might be a very interesting idea. let the agents buy in, have some money that you can do some expansion in marketing or technology or whatever. Pretty interesting idea.
And it's a very democratic process where you can bring in the smaller person who doesn't earn a couple of $100,000 a year, but who may have $1,000 or $2,000 with the idea that this is a good investment and it could lead to retirement.
Well, let's jump right into a quick definition of accredited investor so we can see how important. Yes.
Yeah, Gene, could we do that as right after these breaks? It's going to be time for a break, so we'll talk about what accredited investor, and you just bit on that apple perfectly for me. So we'll be right back, and we'll be talking about accredited investors after these messages.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com. Create your own account. Market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business. All on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. tacticsmagazine.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Thanks for being with us today. So, Gene, let's talk a little bit about accredited investors. Now that we've kind of carved out crowdfunding and made it very clear that crowdfunding isn't about and for everything as it relates in the Jobs Act and what's new, it really relates to small investments. The issue having to do with accredited investors is a much broader and allows for much larger investing. So what is an accredited investor and what are the requirements?
Investor is an investor, an individual or a household, if you would, that has net worth of $1 million, not including their principal residence, or an individual who filing separately has gross income of $200,000 a year repeatedly, and or a family that has total gross income of $300,000 a year repeatedly. Those are the two major definitions of accredited investors that apply to individuals. There are really 16 definitions of accredited investors, but just one other one I want to bring up is sometimes there are groups that have pooled money and they're investing in certain things, or there's a family business that has an investment fund, and instead of looking at the individuals, if that group or that family business has a net worth of over $5 million, then the group or the business is accredited. So those are really the three that we look at. And why it's so important, you know, Howard, we were talking about crowdfunding, and we were talking about, boy, you could raise dollar amounts as small as $1,000, and you can raise $1 million. Well, what's really important to the investor is if investors are shut out of deals because they aren't accredited, where are they going to invest in good ideas and places that they can make profits? Maybe the crowdfunding arena is just what they need. You know, we always talk about it from the money-raising standpoint, but what about the investor standpoint? Howard, I heard somewhere that it was either the IRS or the SEC said that there's only about 8% of the households in the United States that meet the definition of accredited, and that's primarily because the Dodd-Frank a couple years ago took the net worth of your house out of your net worth calculation to determine whether you're accredited or not. And they said that that took about 50% of the people who had been accredited, took them out of the range of the definition of accredited investors. So I'm making a long thing about this, but accredited investors, if that's all you can raise money from, that's a limited source. And if you are accredited investor, there are only going to be a limited number of things you can invest in. But crowdfunding could really well open this up for both sides of the equation.
So from the issuer's perspective, and to those listeners who might be listening to the show right now who are not familiar with some of these terms, the issuer is the person who's looking to raise the capital. They're
right.
The ones who are offering the securities or interest in the company. Let's look at it from their perspective. What is it that they have to be aware of, and what is it that they need to do when they're looking for accredited investors?
All right. This would relate to Regulation D, Rule 506. Since the effectiveness of the Jobs Act, which was in late September, there's a 506B and a 506C. In 506B, you can have all the accredited investors you want in your transaction, and you can raise all the money that you want in your transaction, and you need the investor to self-certify that they are accredited. You would give them an offeree questionnaire. That's a document with a series of questions on it, and they would just simply check a box that they're accredited because of their net worth, or they would check a different box that they're accredited because of their annual income. That still is going to be the way that you will run your 506 offering if you choose not to take the advantage of advertising. Go ahead.
That's a key point now. If you're not going to advertise, which is the way that you could always do it, the investor themselves certify that they are an accredited investor. So the burden is not on the issuer. Now that changes, does it not, or at least as it relates to advertising?
It certainly does. You can just imagine, Howard, that the Securities and Exchange Commission and all the people that work there who are charged with protecting investors from scams, you can just imagine that they're not thrilled about the idea of letting sponsors advertise online or billboards or direct mail or phone call without any control over what it is they're offering. So you can expect some restrictions coming from the SEC that probably weren't in the regulations, in the rule. But at least the people who wrote the rule said, let's do it this way. If you're going to advertise, at least let's make the sponsor take steps to be reasonably assured, the sponsor or the issuer, similar words, take steps to be reasonably assured that every investor is accredited. So here comes the burden. The burden shifts to the issuer to ascertain that every investor in their transaction is accredited. If anyone gets in there and it's not accredited and they've advertised, they've blown their exemption, therefore they should have fully registered with the SEC. But if everyone's accredited, they're okay. So you can imagine that there are, that people are worried about, well, how do I prove that? How do I take, how do I become reasonably assured that Gene Trowbridge is accredited when I take his money?
Well, before we even get to that, let's stress the issue of burden. To lawyers like you and I, burden is such a significant word. It can change everything. All of a sudden, the liability is now on the issuer versus the investor. And that is a huge, huge difference, is it not?
Well, yes, it is. And that's going to keep many of my clients away from choosing the advertising option. And we haven't talked about sophisticated investors, and we're going to get to that. That's another reason that many of my clients won't go into advertising, because they won't be able to attract money from sophisticated investors. But coming back to that burden, it's not only on the issuer. Some of my clients use registered reps, registered advisors, people in the securities industry who have securities licenses to raise money for them. Now it's going to be the responsibility of those people to determine if the investor is accredited. And then when a registered rep brings an investor into my deal, how do I know that the registered rep has taken reasonable steps and can give me information that so that I can be reasonably assured? And what about confidentiality? Now I've got all this information. But let's say I have financial statements from 35 people who are in my deal, and where am I supposed to store those? How am I responsible for that that information for the next 6 or 7 years being confidential and safeguarded and all that? It's a real problem, and we haven't worked it out yet. There's some more regulations coming down between now and the end of the year that'll help us with that. But for right now, this is a kind of a caution sign in the roadway to wide open advertising.
Yeah, there is some real potential grief ahead if the I's aren't dotted and the T's aren't crossed. Let's pause briefly for a few words from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to step a little bit into the what a sophisticated investor is.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's ProspectNow.com.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers, for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit BlocksCRE.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. Log on to BlocksCRE.com.
For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at CREradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio. Via email to questions@CREradio.com or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. We're here today with Gene Trowbridge, and we're talking about crowdfunding and the new Jobs Act. Gene, let's talk a little bit about the sophisticated investor.
All right. Sophisticated investors are not accredited investors by an economic definition. Remember, accredited investors, $1 million net worth or $200,000 or $300,000 annual gross income. So a sophisticated investor wouldn't reach those dollar and cent limits, but they at least have some experience and education or advisors who work with them so that they can make a determination on whether the investment is suitable for them. They probably, in a questionnaire that you would ask questions about an investor, a sophisticated investor would be able to answer that they've made investments in the stock market. They've owned some real estate other than their house on their own. They've invested in limited partnerships or limited liability companies, or they have financial advisors, attorneys or accountants or Uncle Warren Buffett or something to give them advice on whether it's a good deal. Now, why is this important, Howard? The last time I had one of my workshops in IRA, plan administrator came in and said that there was $5.8 trillion in IRA accounts in the United States, and over 60% of the households in the United States have one or more IRA account. And let's just think about a person who has a free and clear house, let's say $400,000 or $500,000 free and clear, $300,000 in their IRA account as a result of rollovers during their whole career. They've got $800,000 of equity. They are not accredited. They have a limit of the types of offerings that they can invest in. But a lot of my clients look at that type of an investor as the source for most of their money. Most of my clients are raising money from sophisticated investors. I'm sure that half of the money that's raised comes from self-directed 401ks and IRA accounts into LLCs that buy real estate. And many of those people are not accredited. So if you're going to continue to raise money from the sophisticated investor, you're not going to be able to advertise, and it's just business as usual.
Is there a minimum income level or
no.
Any other limits?
No.
As to a sophisticated investor, they cannot self-certify, correct?
No, a sophisticated investor can't self-certify, but the sponsor or the issuer has the questionnaire, and after looking and reviewing the answers to the questions, the issuer will make the determination if they're going to accept the person as a sophisticated investor. And why that's important in 506 offering, the way we've been doing it up until this time, and then continuing on in what's called a 506B, you can raise as much money as you want from as many accredited investors as you want. And in addition, you can have up to 35 sophisticated investors in a transaction. And so many transactions that my clients do are done totally with sophisticated investors. And those are people with whom my clients have a relationship. So being able to advertise doesn't really help them much at all.
Now, a sophisticated investor, do you have to have a pre-existing relationship with a sophisticated investor?
Well, you have to have a pre-existing relationship to overcome, you know, to meet the burden of proof that you did not make an offer through advertising or solicitation.
Okay.
Because the rule is you can't make an offer through advertising and solicitation. It doesn't mean you can't build a database by doing education-based marketing. You put on generic presentations, you write a book with a generic message to it, you write articles that are published in newspapers or whatever, and you get people into your database. Sometime in the future, you can make them an offering. And that's a topic for a different, a whole nother interview. How do you move from the solicitation to an existing pre-existing established relationships so that you can make an offer. That's a lengthy, non-bright line, full of gray corners discussion.
All right. I want to make sure that everything's clear for my listeners and myself. If you're talking about advertising, you, of course, can, once you advertise, you can have all accredited investors, but they can't self-certify, correct? If you advertise.
Would you repeat that once more?
If you advertise,
yes,
you can get you can't get a sophisticated investor, and you're limited to accredited investors. Or when crowdfunding becomes available, you can crowdfund. Correct?
Yes.
All right. If you advertise and you're going with accredited investors, they cannot self-certify, so the burden is on the issuer to certify that they are an accredited investor, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's the gist of a lot of what we're talking about. So if you are going to advertise and you need to raise more than $1 million, you are then going to have, you're limited to accredited investors, and you are going to have, the burden is on you. Otherwise, if you're looking to raise less than $1 million, you then are opening the door to getting smaller investors for a smaller project or syndication. And you really have to wait until the SEC comes down with regulations.
That's correct. And we're waiting for the SEC to finalize a rule that was, it was published in July. They had a comment period, and then they extended the comment period to the end of October. They're going to put some more, as we discussed, they're going to put some more regulations and restrictions on the ability to advertise. What they'd like to do, and this may not pass, you never know, but what they came out with originally was, we want to see all your advertising before we use it, before you use it. We want you to file your initial registration statement with us under Regulation D, which is called a Form D, 15 days. Yes.
Gene, let me interrupt you right now. Our sponsors really, really are the ones who pay the bills around here. And we need to take a short break. And I'd like to talk about, when we come back, what some of those proposed regulations are and why you are recommending, that's on the crowdfunding, and why you are recommending that your clients hold off briefly on the crowdfunding efforts.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. TECH, that's the tech. NIQUES, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or via email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to our discussion of crowdfunding. Let's try putting the teeth back in. I'm just joking. Crowdfunding and other financing options. Before the break, we were talking with Gene about some of the SEC proposed regulations or the regulations that are expected. And I think I made a misstatement just before the break. I had indicated, I think perhaps, that you were recommending to your clients to hold off on the crowdfunding until the SEC comes down with its regulations. I think that was a misstatement. I think I really meant to say advertising.
Well, you were right in both cases. I'm recommending that they not do any crowdfunding until the SEC issues their rule. Then it'll be published in the Federal Register, and it'll typically be effective 60 days after its publishing. So stay away from crowdfunding. But the other side of the coin is we should really stay away from advertising until this new rule either gets vetoed or passed, where, as we talked about, you have to submit your advertising to the SEC before you use it. You have to register your offering before you make any offers. And I know they're talking about putting disclaimers into your advertising material that they're going to write. And they're coming out with, they would like to come out with some rules about disclosure documents. So I'm suggesting to all my clients that we hold off bringing out a 506C offering until the first of the year, because we don't want our clients caught in the middle of having an offering on the street when all of a sudden new restrictions come out. But Howard, I need to stop you right here. As I'm sitting here talking to you on this interview, my computer screen is on, and just flashing across my computer screen, and this is breaking news. Seriously, the Securities and Exchange Commission has announced that they are going to unveil their plan for crowdfunding on October 23rd.
Well, isn't that going to interfere with Apple's new announcements?
I don't know. And it says the only real detail we have is that they're going to say that a business using crowdfunding can raise up to $5,000 in 1 year from someone whose net worth is less than $100,000, and investors with a net worth greater than $100,000. Can contribute as much as 10% of their annual income or net worth up to a maximum of $100,000 a year. Now, that goes along with the fact that you can only raise $1 million, but the only standard you're going to have as far as your investors go is what is their net worth, and that will determine the amount of money you can raise. But what's exciting about this is if they issue this on the 23rd, typically, Howard, they have a 30-day public comment period where they accept comments from the public on the proposed rules. Then they meet again and they modify and pass whatever the final rule is. Then it gets published in the Federal Register, and then 60 days later. So we could be within 90 days of having crowdfunding actually be active as of this morning, which is kind of what we said at the beginning of our discussion, that we were looking for something in the first quarter of 2014, and they're only a year late, but they're getting there.
Well, that is exciting breaking news, and you've
yes,
heard
it
here. You've heard it here on exclusively on CRE Radio, as well as the other tens of thousands of other people who got that blasted on their screen. And I'm certainly, actually, I appreciate that very much. What are, oh, I wanted to ask you this question. Now, we're talking about U.S. investors. Do these any of these rules apply to foreign investors?
Well, here comes another topic for another show.
But all right, simply, we'll do that, but let's at least touch on it.
Simply, here's the answer. If you follow, you know, the securities laws are written to protect U.S. persons, United States citizens. So basically, by their nature, they're not written to protect foreigners. Okay? So the answer to your question is, do United States securities laws apply to foreign investors? And the answer really is no, but foreign investors have their own securities laws. I mean, you can't go up to Canada and count on American securities laws to tell you how to raise money from Canadian investors, Canadian citizens. You need to know what the Canadian laws are. So basically the answer is no, the laws don't affect foreigners, but in bringing foreign money into the United States, we do, and the issuer is responsible for complying with provisions of the Patriot Act to make sure that the money that's coming in is coming in from the right type of citizen, from the right type of country. And FIRPTA, you know, the federal law on withholding when foreign investors invest in real estate. The sponsor, the issuer, would be responsible every year for withholding money from their foreign investors' distributions, sending it to the IRS, and then the foreign investor has to go figure out if they can get a refund or not. So it's complicated. But no, we deal with foreign investors all the time.
We'll return with more from Gene Trowbridge after these friendly reminders.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com. Create your own account. Market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business. All on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
And we are back, talking about crowdfunding and other financing options with Gene Trowbridge. Sorry, Gene, I just kind of butchered your name. Gene, what are the likely traps that issuers are going to be perhaps looking at over the next 6 months to the year, actually over the long term, too?
What traps issuers are going to be looking at? Well, let's go into the Rule 506, the 506 landscape, where we're either going to advertise or we're not going to advertise. I think one of the real traps is setting up your offering to be an advertising offering, limiting yourself to only accredited investors, and in the ninth or the 11th hour when you're a couple $100,000 short of money, here comes a sophisticated investor who can fund the last chunk of equity you need. And what are you going to do? Are you going to take that money or are you not going to take that money? And, you know, everyone makes a business decision now and then, but legally that's going to be a trap. Like we always have the traps when someone comes up to you toward the end of your offering and says, that they have some money coming out of a 1031 exchange and they'd like to invest it in your deal, but of course they're looking for a tax deferral, and 1031 exchange money cannot buy interest in an LLC because that's not real estate. So what do you do with that investor? So I think there's those types of traps are going to be important. I think another trap is we're fully expecting that if you use advertising in your offering, it's going to add at least 30 days to the time of your offering. By the time we have to send the marketing material to the SEC first, then we have to wait for their comments, then we have to sign up for Reg D 15 days before you can make an offer. So now how are we going to extend the time in the purchase and sale agreement to buy a property to so that we have enough time? And I know people come to us with a real short time fuse now, and they want to get all the paperwork done in 2 weeks because they've waited. Well, there's a trap that I think we're going to fall into. And then the biggest trap we're going to have is just misunderstanding. You can probably imagine, Howard, how many calls our office has had in the last 2 months about, can we advertise now? Can we crowdfund now? This is approved. What about this? And not everyone gets the full news.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of that. We're beginning to run short on time. We have a little bit less than 5 minutes left. There are a couple of issues that I wanted to touch on. One is people need to understand what a security is, and you had previously mentioned this friends and family exemption. In a sentence or two, people need to understand what a security is. What is a security?
A security is simply when someone invests money and there's a common enterprise, like an LLC or a tenant in common or a stock, a common enterprise going on, and the person who invests the money is looking for a profit and looking to someone else to make that profit happen. Howard, if I said to you, I've got a project, send me $500,000, we can double our money, I'll do all the work, it's totally passive from your end, that's a security. And there is no exemption for friends and family. There is no exemption for that.
So if you go to your friends and family and you go, look, I need some money for this business venture, and you make some money, that's a security. And you're basically an issuer, so you're subject to the SEC rules and regulations.
Yes, and under 506, that's going to be problematic, but here comes crowdfunding. Under crowdfunding, that's going to be perfect. That's going to be the idea for crowdfunding.
Now, if there is one takeaway that a listener can take away from this show, one really most important element, what would be that someone should learn or understand from this show?
Well, I think the one thing that they should learn and understand from this show is that we're in a time period where there's uncertainty about the changing rules. We've heard things about the rules. We've waited for some clarification. We've got a little bit of it, but there's more clarification coming, I would say, in the next 60 days. So keep your eyes and ears open. Get legal advice. Hopefully the people that you're asking advice from are keeping up on this stuff. And what I learn every single day is I got to keep my computer screen on. I got to go out find the people who are the reporters, the Bloombergs, the SEC, the people who report all this stuff on a timely basis. And you can't be a day late or a day early. So that's really the number one thing to learn. The number two thing to learn is, Howard, I think that you're just simply in the environment of selling securities. Just deal with it. Just know that you're selling securities. now you have to follow the rules, and there are a couple different ways you can do it, but you just have to follow the rules. Most real estate people think they're selling real estate. Well, they're not selling real estate anymore because they're not selling title to real estate. They're selling something else. They're selling a piece of paper, which is a security, and welcome to a totally different business.
My takeaway is please consult with a knowledgeable attorney like Gene. I will tell you what, I will flat out, I'm an attorney, but this is not my specialty, and I'm going to be calling Gene when I'm ready to start crowdfunding. I am not going to make any mistakes. It's far too important. Gene, would you please let everybody know how to contact you?
Well, yes, thank you. The last name is spelled Trowbridge, T-R-O-W, Bridge. That's important because that's in my email address, gene@genetrowbridge.com. And they can all see all about all the stuff I do on syndication by going to my website, which is groupsponsor.com. Or the website of my law firm, which has got a great name, syndicationlawyers.com. So three ways to get me, best by email, and then two websites, groupsponsor.com or syndicationlawyers.com.
Do you have any speaking engagements or appearances coming up?
We are having our three-day advanced workshop in Santa Ana starting in November 12th, 3 days in Santa Ana, and it's the last workshop we have of the year, and now it's going to be very exciting. We always knew it was going to be exciting because we were going to be able to talk about the new advertising rules, and now it looks like we're, in addition, going to be able to talk about the new crowdfunding rules. So that'll be a good event, and people can find out about that on my groupsponsor.com website.
Great. Well, Gene, I'd like to thank you again for talking with me and informing my listeners on an extremely important topic. Actually, I think one that is very, very exciting, something that I'm really looking forward to. So thank you, Gene.
Thank you, Howard. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I'd like to let everybody know that our next show is going to be on November 1st, where we're going to be interviewing the CEO of Kimco, who could probably talk about his ideas of whether or not crowdfunding or the new Jobs Act will help them, although it really won't because they're a REIT. And we will be doing a show in November with David Pogue on Leeds, Energy Star, and Gresby, which is a major sustainability show. And we're going to be doing a show on appraisals coming up before the end of the year. We just came from the Lee & Associates Summit in Las Vegas, and next week I am going to be on my way to the, as my brain starts fading out here, I'm getting a little bit tired, we'll be going to the SIOR conference in Chicago. They were kind enough to invite me to that conference next week. So, everyone, I'd like to thank you very much, and well, everyone, have a great weekend.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.